Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Coming to us today from Denver is Erica Salmon Byrne. Erica is an Executive Vice President at Ethisphere. Erica, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Absolutely, Adam. My pleasure.
So we're going to talk today about root cause analysis. It's one of those phrases that is spoken of quite a bit in the world of ethics and compliance. It's something people want to do. What do you think is the cause most recently, Erica, of a lot more interest in the area of root cause analysis?
So, Adam, you know, it's a great question, and it's part of the reason I was so happy when you reached out to see if I was interested in coming on the podcast, and you specifically suggested this topic, because this is something that I have been thinking about and talking about for the course of the last year and a half or so, and I think it's really driven by a couple of factors. One, obviously, of course, is the DOJ's Guidance 2.17 that came out last year that specifically asked, as part of the analysis, what is the company's root cause analysis of the misconduct at issue? So did they ask the why, but underneath it, what systemic issues were identified and who was involved in making the analysis? And those are three questions that I think, you know, as a compliance professional, we ought to be asking ourselves. But I was really surprised to realize, to find in the research that we did, just how few companies are actually successfully doing it.
Interesting. And just so we have a definition, I mean, we're talking about these root cause analysis typically when things go awry. What's the difference for somebody who wants to know, well, what's the difference between an analysis and a root cause analysis?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference is the point of asking the question. So, you know, let's pick on Wells Fargo just for a second, because one of the things that the report into all of the events at Wells Fargo showed us is that there were a lot of investigations, right? There was a lot of people who looked into allegations of misconduct against individual Wells Fargo employees, and they say they analyzed the findings, they looked at the facts, they made a disciplinary decision, and then they moved on. They didn't stop to say, why did this happen? And is there any underpinning component of the ethics and compliance program or any underpinning component of the culture at the company that caused this to be possible? That's really the point of root cause, is how did this happen? So that's the investigation, that's the analysis. But the root cause component is, why did this happen? What was it about the company or the situation the employee found themselves in or the particular circumstances? Is there a learning to be drawn out of the results of this investigation?
So when doing a root cause analysis, you know, you're getting into the foundations, the bedrock, if you will, of what happened. How, for want of a better phrase, how root do you want need to go? I mean, you obviously don't want to go too shallow where you basically, you know, to use your example, said somebody did this, it was wrong, they're done. But by the same token, you don't want to end up getting down into the level of facts that the company was, say, incorporated in Delaware and not Montana, and that may have had some small contribution. You don't want to get lost into stuff that, A, you can't affect, or B, is really not material. How do you know when you really are at the right sort of root level?
I think it's you know, it's a little bit of a process of trial and error. So when we got interested in this root cause topic, one of the things that we ended up doing is a research project. So we actually sent a survey out to our community of companies and asked them about their root cause practices. Do you do root cause? Do you have a system that supports root cause? Do you have a formal taxonomy? How many layers does that taxonomy have? Who's involved in the determination of your root cause? And we came out with a research report earlier this summer, you know, that really kind of summarized all the different pieces of what we found during the course of that process. And so I saw in that process a wide variety of root cause taxonomy structures. So everything from kind of pretty basic fraud triangle analysis. The fraud triangle analysis was something that came up for a lot of companies where they're sort of looking at kind of maybe 3 to 4 to 5 areas where they can classify the root cause, and they don't go, you know, beyond that. It can certainly become a rabbit hole. So, you know, I think it's a matter of figuring out what looks right for your organization, right? In terms of how deep do you need to go? What is it that you want to try to figure out? And then how do you want to structure that so that you can compare things across investigations? You know, this is one of the key things that came out of the research that we did. Root cause analysis by itself on each individual investigation can be valuable, but what can be really valuable is when you can do some trending, right? So is it a permissive manager? Was it a lack of clarity in the policy? Was it a lack of monitoring activity that allowed this to happen, right? If you can start to do some trending across those different buckets, that's where you can really start to have a meaningful impact on your program.
So that starts talking to the idea that, you know, to do this right, you need a lot of data on your organization in terms of, you know, not just what are the incidents that happened to see if there's in common, but what were sort of the ways things were dealt, how was it created? So what is some of the data that you should have at hand when you want to do a good root cause analysis?
So the obviously, the more centralized your investigation information can be, the better. And this is one of the places where I think the root cause component is combining or meeting up with some of the trends we're seeing coming out of the Me Too movement. So one of the things that's happening right now is consolidation of case management systems. So you've got HR's investigations one system, you've got ethics and compliance investigations in the same system, hopefully you've got some quality issues, you know, all feeding into the same system with different layers of permission that allow you to look across the organization. Because if the only place you're doing root cause is on the, you know, couple hundred compliance investigations you do every year, that won't be as powerful. It's a good place to start, don't get me wrong, but it won't be as powerful as if you can start to pull in some of the trending and things that are happening in other parts of the organization. And that was one of the things that we ended up seeing in the data from the research project we did is an increasing trend of companies consolidating case management systems while still having different functions conducting investigations across the business.
Now, yeah, and as you were discussing that, you know, you mentioned one of the things that can be an issue, which is finding all the data that may be siloed in different places. That can be a huge barrier. Are there other barriers that are out there that compliance professionals typically run into?
So for sure, the different case management systems not talking to each other, right? I think that's probably the biggest barrier. If you've got a system or a situation where, you know, compliance and ethics is running things out of their case management system that's tied to the hotline, and then HR's got their own system or a spreadsheet or whatever they're using to track issues on the HR front, and then IT has something different, and audit has something different, and loss prevention has something different. You know, that siloing of data makes doing real trending and root cause very, very challenging. It's a very manual process. The other thing that I was surprised by in the data is the number of companies that are allowing investigators to sort of go their own way, for lack of a better phrase, in different parts of the company. So there was a definite minority of companies that are training investigators together. So it was 33% of the companies that responded to the survey we did earlier this year said, yes, we actually train all of our investigators together using the same template to conduct an investigation so that the data is organized in the same way, the taxonomy is the same for root cause, we're using similar terms, we understand how each other approaches investigations, and we all know each other. 51%, the compliance and ethics division was training their investigators, and everybody else was training their investigators their own way, and then the remainder were not doing any training for investigators. They just relied on their investigators' professional backgrounds. So I think, you know, if you've got a situation where HR runs investigations its way and compliance runs investigations its way, that's another, you know, challenge when it comes to trying to do a meaningful root cause analysis. Because if you don't have a little, and this is a story we heard over and over while we were talking to companies about root cause processes, if you don't have the dedication and the diligence to really sit down and think about root cause, it's very tempting for every root cause to be training failure, right? Because that's an easy answer. I'm going to check root cause as training failure. That just means that people need more training. It's easy, you know, that's comparatively easy for the investigator to check that box and move on. without really having to think about, okay, maybe this was also being driven by a permissive manager, or this was being driven by, you know, some sort of pressure in the culture, or whatever the case may be. And so that's, I think, one of the other things that people struggle with when they're trying to do a meaningful root cause analysis.
Interesting. Interesting. I also have to say, I wonder how much it really gets down to, as you said, people talk about a training failure. I wonder how much of it is tied to the incentive program as a common issue, because that's basically what people see that they get rewarded for. So
right.
In terms of strategies for overcoming these problems, challenges, and getting to the root cause and overcoming these barriers, you know, obviously getting everyone trained similarly would seem to be a good way to overcome that issue. Any other good strategies you can offer folks?
So, you know, I think that, and this is something, Adam, that I wrote about in the SECE magazine, which is what caused you to invite me to come on the podcast to talk about this in a little bit more detail. One is really looking at the technology that's underpinning your investigations process, because chances are very, very good that there are ways in which your case management system capability writ large can support this kind of work more effectively. So we're hearing from a lot of companies that they are actually using the board's interest in Me Too numbers to drive consolidation of case management. And what companies are generally doing is they're taking a big step back and saying, what functionality do I need my case management system to have? And then they're going out and looking for the best case management system that has that functionality in those different permission settings. And people are impressively being very agnostic about where that system comes from. I talked to one company last week. They actually moved to their health and safety case management system because it had the best functionality for the company as a whole. And they're moving everybody, HR, IT, audit, loss prevention, everybody's going on to the health and safety case management system. You know, so sort of going through that exercise to say, okay, I need all of this data to live in one place. That's how I'm going to be able to use it in a meaningful way. Who's got the capability I need, divorced from my hotline, divorced from the telephony, you know, all of these different component pieces that compliance and ethics professionals worry about a lot. You know, where can I find the best functionality for what it is that I'm trying to do? And then building out your taxonomy. You know, using that system to say, okay, I'm going to have, you know, I'm going to base my taxonomy on the fraud triangle. I'm going to base my taxonomy on other academic research into root cause. We have one system that we saw when we were doing this research project that has five layers of root cause, where you can pick your primary couple of root causes, and then you can break those down into ancillary causes that the company can then figure out how to address. And so, you know, sort of looking at your case volume, looking at what makes the most sense for your organization, and figuring out what does my taxonomy look like, and then you train all your investigators together. But the technology is really the sort of the necessary first step.
Erica, thank you so much. And I think there's a lot of insight here into how people can better think and identify what a root cause analysis truly is and how to best get to that, and also how to get a better handle in general on their compliance program and what's working and what's causing the failures. So thank you for sharing all of that with us today. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SECE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.
Thanks, Adam.